Welcome, everybody. Thank you for your attention. My name is Dan Gibbons, and I'm here from the City Club of Chicago on behalf of Jackie and Dr. Mazur and our whole board. Thank you for being here. There's an awful lot of incredible people in this room, and I just want to run through a number of so you know how much we love to do this, to acknowledge who's here, why we're here, and why the City Club brings all these amazing people together. That's why we do what we're doing, to bring leaders like all of you. We have the Vice Mayor of Chicago, Walter Burnett, Alderman Walter Burnett, sitting right next to Alderman Stephanie Coleman. Alderman, and I believe Alderman Michelle Harris is on the way. So thank you to those three who are very busy these days, as are some of our commissioners. Commissioner Rachel Arfa is here, one of our favorite speakers and city commissioners. Thank you, and as well as Commissioner Chris Brown from the library. And then Brenda Bouyf, also from the Library Foundation, which does remind me that I want to take a moment and recognize one of Chicago's absolutely most incredible civic leaders over. She was 101 years old, and for about 85 to 100 of those years, Cindy Pritzker made her mark on Chicago like really no other woman that I've ever met. I was so fortunate to have lunch with her at her house just a few couple months ago, and all she could talk about was the library, the Harold Washington Library, women in she's seen so much women in civic leadership, and unfortunate how difficult it was to become a civic leader back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Look what she did for this city, and just an incredible role model. And we lost her just last week, and I just want to take a minute and acknowledge her, especially all that she's done for Chicago and all that she's done for women leaders in Chicago. Thank you so much, Cindy Pritzker, and to the Pritzker family. What a wonderful, wonderful life and a wonderful riot of a woman. She was so fun to be around. Okay, let's see. We have a couple of very important people in the room, and one, of course, is the city clerk. The other is the other Anna Valencia, her mother. We'd like to welcome her, as well as the clerk's husband, Riyad Cosby. Riyad, welcome. We understand family support and how important it is to do what we're doing. We also understand corporate and philanthropic support and getting all these great people. Connie Lindsay is here in the room. Connie, thank you for all you've done. Sid Bala is here. Jen Guzman, who spoke at City Club recently. David Greasing from the Better Government Association. There's a pair of brothers here, and for some reason, they're in the back. I got to figure that out. But those are all great seats, too. Jim Francik and Art Francik. Thank you, gentlemen, for being such great supporters of City Club and of this great city. Melissa Harris, also a great friend of City Club. Jessica Smith and Lauren Foley, they are taking the torch from Jim Turman and Rick Jaskolka. A wonderful transition to the next generation of leadership, which we're so proud to acknowledge at City Club and help lift up. Those are two young women who are taking over from two legends, in Rick Jaskolka and Jim Turman. Jim's here, and Jessica and Lauren are here. Thank you so much for all that you do and for that and continued support at City Club. Sarah Garza Resnick is here, also a former speaker at City Club. We have a few recovering government workers, what I like to call them, Pat Carey and John Dunn, Janae Myers, Eve Rodriguez Montoya, some amazing people who have been great civil servants. So thank you all, and if I missed any electeds or others, we do appreciate you being in this room. This is your club. Clarisol Duque is here also. She's not recovering. She is doing so much right now, working for Senator Dick Durbin. Michael Fosnock from Clayco also. Thank you, Michael. So because of this mix of people, we are able to share this. And you know how important it is, and you know how proud we are at City Club to welcome you all here together, where these conversations hopefully lead to better things. So thank you for that attention. I'm going to turn to our guest speaker today, who has similarly helped carry the torch of leadership to the next generation of leaders in Chicago. Under her direction and her watch, city government has really come into the 21st century, and government has really been modernized. Since 2017, there's been an awful lot done that I think you're going to hear about today. She's agreed to answer some questions after she speaks, so please prepare any of those, and we'll make this a little interactive in a few minutes and share some questions. But in the meantime, please join me in welcoming to City Club of Chicago the Chicago City Clerk, Anna Valencia.
All right, I'm being the new millennial and doing this from an iPad, so bear with me for a second. All right. Well, first, it's so good to be back. Thank you, Dan and Board Chair Jackie Robinson Ivey. It's been quite some time since I've been at the City Club. A lot has changed in the world, like a global pandemic, as well as the birth of our daughter 5 years ago, Rihanna, who will actually turn 5 next month and has demanded a Disney World trip, so stay tuned. But I'm really excited to share with you what we've been up to in the clerk's office. I've been Chicago City Clerk for 8 years. Voters have twice elected me to this office. But I'm not ashamed to say that I was first appointed, not elected, to the job. I was named to the position midterm after it was vacated by the incumbent. And I want to share that story with you. Now, let me remind you, I've had a long and productive working relationship with then Mayor Rahm Emanuel. I worked on his legislative council and gov affairs team for 4 years. I finished as his director, overseeing the mayor's agenda in City Council, D.C., and Springfield. My job? Execute the mayor's agenda through the City Council skillfully as possible. Now, there are many different ways to get to a yes in City Council, especially with 50 alderpersons, but asking nicely is rarely one of them. So when I learned the clerk's position was open, I didn't hesitate. I called Mayor Emanuel from a Jewel parking lot, and I said, I want the job. Then, for good measure, I called Senator Dick Durbin, Secretary of State Jesse White, and probably the Vice Mayor, and asked them both to follow up on my behalf. And they did. And I got the job. But I also got called into the mayor's office, where he told me he didn't appreciate being backed in the corner like that. Well, sir, what can I say? I learned from the best. I've been on the job for 8 years now, and I can assure you it takes sharp elbows to be Chicago City Clerk and navigate Chicago politics. The clerk's office is widely known to be the secretary of the City Council, but we also collect a lot of revenue for the city. My office brings in over $130 million in revenue annually, mostly from city stickers, residential parking permits, and dog licenses. The money funds 10 city departments and pays to pave 4,000 miles of your road. Over the course of my tenure, I've worked with 3 mayors, making me currently the longest tenured citywide elected official. I've seen a lot. I've paid attention. I've learned from it. I've seen who Chicago works for and who it works against. I've seen how it works well and how it fails. Mm-hmm. And the most importantly, I spent the time to figure out the why. Mayors Emanuel, Lightfoot, and Johnson have wildly different governing styles and agendas. And with the latter, seemingly endless staff turnover. The revolving door on the fifth floor has taught me the value of experience, consistency, and institutional knowledge. I understand the importance of hiring and retaining a strong team and building relationships across all levels of government, along with the business community and the public, because relationships matter. It is everything in this business. And I'm so proud of my dedicated team, many who have been with me for all 8 years. I'm looking at you, Kat O'Connell. My senior team alone has a combined of 128 years of government experience. Well, you're going to clap again because they're here today. And I want to publicly acknowledge my senior leadership team for their service to the city, because what you do goes unnoticed so many times. Can I please wave your hand, team? Now, let me tell you some of the things we've done and we are doing. First, we are transforming the way Chicagoans engage the city services, making it simpler, more transparent, and more connected than ever before. You're right. Here's my prop. Raise your hand if you have a city key. If you don't have one, we'll get you one. This is my library card. Shout out to libraries. Venture card and prescription discount card. I can use it to get discounted Chicago Sky tickets. You may see me at a few games. Or 10% off at Sweet Mandy B's, to name just a few of our business partners. It's a valid government ID. It's also available to all Chicagoans, regardless of a resident's age, housing status, criminal record, immigration status, or gender identity. City Key is convenient and it's free. I mean, I know you complain about what's free in the city, but this is free. And we introduced it in 2018 to break down barriers to city services and unite Chicagoans. Demand has been so great, in December, we launched first-of-its-kind online platform where you can do it from your mobile phone, upload your application, and it'll be sent directly to your house. This especially helps busy families who don't have time to go to an in-person event, and they can still get an important service. Second, our City Council modernization plan is pushing that body into the 21st century, maybe kicking and screaming, but we're going there, and giving Chicagoans unprecedented access to city government. In 2022, I introduced electronic voting at council meetings, the first major U.S. city to do so. I know Stephanie likes it because we're, you know, that millennial in technology. It replaced a time-consuming system that required a roll call voice vote of 50 alderpersons in every piece of legislation. Simply archaic. Now they use a tablet to cast their vote, and everyone in the chamber and online in the public can see those votes in real time on a video board. It's a giant step for transparency, efficiency, and innovation. But if you ever try keeping up with the City Council business, you know that the electronic legislative management system is the way of the future, and it's making it easier and better than ever before. I'm loving these claps. Okay. Now what's coming next? Well, you're here. You're going to hear it first. April will be Amnesty Month. For the entire month of April, anyone with an expired city sticker can buy one at any of our three clerk's office locations without paying a late fee or back charge. That's $60 in savings alone. And if you are out of compliance for more than 6 months, that's $110 in savings. Why are we doing this?
Because you're amazing.
Because mounting, that too, and Miss Rose told me to, because mounting debt from fines and fees can quickly sink a family's finances. And studies show that this hurts working class and black and brown families the most. Let's be honest here. If most of us in this room found a ticket on our car for an expired city sticker, we'd probably roll our eyes, for missing the deadline, then begrudgingly go buy it, cough up the late fee, pay the ticket, and go on with our lives. You probably don't know what it's like to put $10 of gas in your car and pray and hope it lasts until payday. But for families living paycheck to paycheck, that $60 late fee, that $200 ticket is a big deal. And after they get a second and a third and a fourth ticket because they can't pay the first, they might have to choose between paying that debt off or buying groceries for their families. They might fall behind on rent and get evicted. They might miss work because they can't afford childcare. Their car might get impounded so they can't get to work. The hole gets deeper and deeper. And in our current economic climate, we should acknowledge that we're all a little closer to that reality than we are to being billionaires. In 2019, I set out to reform Chicago's oppressive fines and fees, and I met a CTA bus driver at a community roundtable. Back then, if you didn't buy a new sticker on time, there was a $200 ticket that quickly doubled if you didn't settle up. The bus driver, like many others, couldn't afford the ticket, so he couldn't get a sticker. He piled up $5,000 in ticket debt. Eventually, his commercial driver's license was suspended because of his outstanding tickets. And he lost his job. How is that good for Chicago? How is that morally defensible? No city should generate sizable chunks of revenue through punitive fines that hit its most vulnerable residents the hardest. The word for that is predatory. And from the city's perspective, it's self-defeating to ruin people's lives. Because we've learned that if we give a realistic path to paying this debt, if we toss them a lifeline, they'll take it. Today, under the reforms I brought forward, the bus driver would have been able to get on track with the Department of Finance's Fix-It Defense Program. He'd just have to come in and buy the sticker. He'd be eligible just once to have that ticket waived for a first violation. That would have stopped the mounting debt before it got out of control. He could also qualify for a payment plan for now as just little as $10 up front. In the past, Chicagoans with accumulated vehicle debt had to come up with 50%, half down. Can you imagine $2,500 down to get on a payment plan? Not surprisingly, few of them did. So now the fun part. I know I have to leave some time for Q&A. Dan wants us to be engaging. But I know one of the questions, maybe even the first question, is going to be, are you running for mayor in 2027? And the answer to that question is, I have not made my decision. But if I don't run for mayor, I will run for city clerk again. Because here's what I do know right now. At this moment in history, no one who believes in democracy should retreat. You don't need to be mayor, CEO, city council member, or have any fancy title behind your name to identify a problem right now, because there's a lot of them, and help solve it. Lead from where you stand right now. And I am standing here opening my platform to the people of Chicago, everyone in this room, to convene tables and help execute ideas to push this city forward. Now is a time to be courageous and lead with conviction. Throughout my 13 years at City Hall, I've had some strong thoughts about what the next mayor, or to be frank, the current mayor, needs to get done. I have shared my thoughts and ideas with him, the previous mayor, and the mayor before that. And now I'm going to share them out loud. I'm going to break them up in three areas: public safety, transit, and economic development. Now, I know there's countless other topics, but they only gave me 20 minutes. First, our police officers deserve so much better than that what they're getting. They don't have the tools and technology to do their jobs. They don't have the resources to safeguard their physical and mental well-being, leaving them drained as they try to rebuild trust with the community they serve. There aren't enough of them, and we all know this. We need to find ways to recruit and retain the best candidates. We need to stop canceling their days off, stop requiring them to work so much overtime. CPD is lucky to have a strong superintendent in Larry Snelling, who came up through the ranks and has the confidence of our officers and the public. A wise mayor, and I commend Mayor Johnson for this, will support and empower him. Let him lead. We also need to be realistic about the fact that our officers alone can't solve gun violence. It's on all of us. Over the last few years, philanthropy, business, community, and government have partnered to expand community violence intervention programs. And it's working. Between 2021 and 2023, homicides dropped 32% and another 9% in 2024. I want to thank everyone who is part of these initiatives. We need more of this, and we need it now. Second, our transit system is in fiscal jeopardy. The CTA, Metra, and PACE collectively face a fiscal cliff of $770 million when federal pandemic relief runs out. A world-class city demands a world-class transit system. And where are we going to get the money for this investment? Well, here's an idea. In 2016, voters in Los Angeles approved a half-cent sales tax increase for the most ambitious transit expansion in LA County history. Measure M currently generates over $1 billion per year. I repeat, $1 billion. It took real leadership led by former Mayor Eric Garcetti to sell taxpayers on that vision. And now, Austin, Tampa, Nashville, and Cincinnati all have done the same thing and now have a dedicated local source of support for their public transit system, not just relying on Springfield and the federal government. A solution for Chicago must rely on more than a bailout from Springfield. And it starts with a constructive partnership with Governor J.B. Pritzker. So, to be clear, to solve our transit woes, I'm calling for the city of Chicago to elect a mayor who can work with and not against Governor Pritzker and who has the will to campaign for new revenue and the experience to get it done. Third, economic development. For starters, we need to revive international tourism. First, by pushing and negotiating with our major airline carriers to reopen direct flights to and from China. Before the pandemic, more than 61 million people visited Chicago annually, and we're still 10 million below that. China, our largest source of international tourism, now with just one direct flight on Cathay Pacific from Hong Kong, we've yet to recover. That is revenue we need now more than ever. We also need to restore our vibrant downtown, allowing us to invest in our under-resourced neighborhoods. I want to commend both Mayor Lightfoot and now Mayor Johnson for the efforts to convert vacant downtown office buildings into residential apartments. We need a comprehensive housing plan that supports the workforce, like our teachers, first responders, and professionals moving into the city right now. Without affordable, sustainable, and safe housing, we won't be able to attract new businesses to relocate to Chicago and help us expand our tax base. I also want to commend Team Culture, led by Broadway and Chicago's Lou Raisin, for a series of new business-led ideas to restore vibrancy in the Loop. The mayor needs to listen and invest in the best of their new ideas. And we need to expand investment programs on Chicago's South and West Sides. Programs like the Pritzker-Traubert Foundation's Chicago Prize, which every 2 years invests $10 million and spurs additional public and private investments into a real estate development project in South or West Side neighborhood. In fact, they've just broken ground on a new community hub in West Garfield Park, the first time a commercial project has risen in the neighborhood in over 50 years. So you're probably asking, where do I get off telling Chicago's mayor what to do? I spent years speaking up to Rahm Emanuel, one of Chicago's most impactful mayors. I spearheaded passage of police accountability reforms, regulatory changes to rideshare and short-term lodging, modernization of the CTA Red and Purple Lines, stabilization of pension funds, and the creation of Chicago's first legal protection fund, Chicago Is With You, to assist immigrants and refugees threatened with deportation. I've set an ambitious agenda for the city clerk's office, including fines and fees reform, council modernization, and the creation of the Chicago Status of Women and Girls Working Group to recommend policies to make the city a safer and more equitable one. Now, this doesn't sit well with the people who underestimate the clerk's office, or frankly, me. The people who think we should just stick to selling city stickers and dog licenses and be the secretary of the city council, all which are great responsibilities, by the way. At a budget hearing one year, an alderman, who shall go unnamed, not any of these, went so far as to tell me I should just stay in my lane. Excuse me? Let me tell you how I got here. I grew up in Granite City, Illinois, a manufacturing town down near St. Louis. My dad was a union painter who worked side jobs to make sure we had things for Christmas and braces, or to save a little for the times he wasn't working. My mom was a nonprofit grant writer who got laid off because she wasn't the one with a college degree. When she was diagnosed with breast cancer, she was more worried about how I would finish at the University of Illinois for my degree than her own health care. I got a scholarship and was first in my family to graduate from college. It was their hard work that gave me the opportunity to choose my career, to choose my calling. Inspired by the faith and belief system that they instilled in me, I chose public service, and that is my lane. So as city clerk, I'm not just selling city stickers. I'm making those stickers more accessible. And I'm reforming the predatory system that has devastated too many working families who fell behind in getting one. I'm eliminating obstacles to opportunity by making sure all Chicagoans have easy access to City Key. I've been out in our community speaking and, most importantly, listening to the needs of our city's residents, and I am committed more than ever to be a voice for them. If their voices aren't being heard by the current administration, I am going to speak up loudly for them, because their voices matter just as much today as they do on Election Day. Yeah. I'm here to help families like the one I grew up in. I am here to support Chicago, our strength, our culture, our diversity. That is my lane, and I hope you will all join me. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That was inspiring. I would like to, as you mentioned, you agreed to ask a few or answer
a
few questions. And I'm happy to come out into the audience if anyone has any questions. I have a couple of my own, of course, and we have a couple of pre-submitted. So why don't I start with one that has been pre-submitted, because it's a very City Club-esque question, and it came from Charmaine Torma. If you're here, would you raise your hand? Okay. How would you like to see the nonprofit sector work with the city to make our community stronger? Before you answer that, if anyone does have a question, put your hand up and I'll make my way over there while she's answering. And don't be too quick. Okay, we'll get there. But I think you understood
nonprofit,
that one about the nonprofit
working
sector
with the government.
Working with the government. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so I have a lot of friends in philanthropy. I love it because they have all the money and we need the ideas and the money to come. So I would first say that good policy, strong policy that I've seen with fines and fees, and I want to give it up to Miss Rose, because Miss Rose is the former president of Kofi Power Pack, and she is the one who barged in my office with this fines and fees justice plan and information and said, we need you to do this. And I was too afraid of Miss Rose to say no. And so thank you, Miss Rose, for leading on that. In 2019, we took this on, and I was told I was opening Pandora's box and I shouldn't do it because it was too hard. Well, if you know me, I like to do things that are too hard, and we all should. But what was beautiful about this collaboration of fines and fees is that we pulled the University of Chicago in and helped get a grant to do the research needed for this. We had philanthropy at the table. We had the Woodstock Institute at the table. We had a Coalition for Jobs. We had all these other nonprofits at the table, along with our community organizers, our parents, and government, our commissioners. And so we would go into these meetings, and I would be sweating through my blazer because I was like, what is going to be said today? But that was where the beauty came out of it, because all those perspectives were at the table to look at what is this going to do for the business sector, what it's going to do for the government, what's going to be for nonprofit. And we could come to agreement of recommendations that we put into policy. So if you're a nonprofit leader, philanthropist, or whatever, please reach out to the government, because we need your research, we need your data, and we need you to bring your resources and perspectives to help us get this, these things done. Government can't do it alone. And we're at a time where we need our civic leaders to help lead us. And I think government, the best way it works is you bring us your ideas from the community, and we help bring them to life.
Yeah. All right.
Dan.
We love doing that here at City Club. Thank you. And I have a couple. I think Jackie might have one as well. I'll start.
Thanks, Dan. Hi, Anna. Our city, more than ever, as well as our country, is so divided, us versus them politically. I'm old. When I grew up, it wasn't like that, right? But now you're either D or you're R, you don't talk. We can't survive that way, right? How do you approach this? What's your sage advice to us? And as a leader, what are you doing to make that tent bigger and bring us all back together?
So I think we have to get away from the labels, for one thing, and go back to the basics. If you take away and strip us down, I want my daughter to have opportunities just like her mother did. We want our kids to have affordable education, go to the parks and play safely. All these things, transit, we want transit to run on time and get us to work. I think there was a staggering statistic that 1 out of 5 Chicagoans rely on our transit system. So if that goes down, like, we're in trouble. And so we have to get back to the basic of core issues. And that's why I like local government so much, is because we can kind of put the partisanship aside and talk about the issues we do agree upon, we do believe in. And I have friends that, shocker, are Republicans. But we find common ground on what brings us together than separate. And I know that's kind of Pollyannish, but I think it's important. I think storytelling, inviting people who disagree with you at the table. You can't say that you're inclusive, but leave dissenting voices out of the room. That's not helpful. That's not helpful for building trust. It's not helpful. I need people to tell me, no, slow down, go a different direction. I may not want to hear that. I want it timed and alone for my feedback, but that's important. And we've gotten away from having uncomfortable conversations. I was talking to a school group right before this, and I told them that conflict is good. Don't run away from conflict. Conflict is good. We have to have these conversations and learn, but our kids need to be taught that. So we're doing a civics curriculum with Chicago Public Schools and City Colleges, the Chicago's First Fund. We just actually put an application in for a $9 million grant for Lever for Change. And we want to reteach our kids K through 12 and onto City Colleges on what is it to be civically engaged. We can't start at sixth grade or high school level. We have to start early on of why people should be paying attention to the local government, how to hold accountable, how to fact check, how to do research, all how to talk, how to deal with conflict, how to make policies together when you come from different perspectives. So if you want to get engaged in our Next Gen City Council, there's going to be some badass kids at the end of May running council, and I encourage you to get involved in that too.
Oh, I thought you had a question. Okay.
Oh, one more.
I have one over here.
City Kirk Valencia, I just want to thank you for the Legal Protection Fund. I'm with a group called Chicago Commons. We work with kids and families of diverse backgrounds, and the Legal Protection Fund provides a line of hope for families who are struggling with different kinds of issues, especially immigration. In this current environment where many of the folks who we serve are maybe afraid to leave their communities and many of the businesses in the communities that we work in, what advice do you give to the audience here to support those communities or to the people who are within those communities who are afraid to come out of their homes given the onslaught of what's happening with regards to immigration policy federally but impacting the city?
So I want to thank Claire Saul and Senator Durbin, because right after the new administration got in, I think 2 weeks after, we found ourselves in Little Village talking to some of the nonprofits who families aren't dropping off their kids to school or going into work, and the fear is palpable. And our businesses on 26th Street, which is one of our strongest economic corridors, just second to Michigan Avenue, but if you ask them, they're number one. And they are losing business, like 60% down from the year before. So my first thing for all of our businesses and our immigrant community and our local businesses in general, my coffee shop, Muse Coffee Shop, shout out, I don't know if Suhaley is still here, but we need to show up and use our pocketbooks to also support these local businesses. Where can you, find catering at your company? What are your procurement officer, or what are your procurement doing besides just Starbucks? Can you find something that's local and support these folks? We've been doing that takeout in my own office each week from a new local business to help support them. That's just one way, is to make a difference with your pocketbook. The other way is showing up. People are afraid, but if they see us out walking in their communities, going to businesses, that helps give people relief. Just even just posting something, just so that people don't feel alone, that they can feel seen and protected. And then with the Legal Protection Fund, we're going to be fighting to keep that line item in the budget, because we know there's budget cuts coming, but it's a very important lifeline for folks. We have 250 community navigators that are mostly immigrant women who go through trainings and help also get job opportunities, leadership trainings, and they are dispersed between 10 community-based organizations in the city, knocking on doors, doing Know Your Rights trainings, help do screenings for folks who need different services. So we have to keep that lifeline. So to my philanthropy brothers and sisters in here, keep that in mind when you're looking at funding, that we need to increase it at a time right now, so needed, and keep that line there for so many families who rely on these free legal screenings and important information. So please, again, use your pocketbook and make a difference that way, and show up for the communities. And if you need ways to get plugged in, or you're looking for nonprofits to support, reach out to us and we can make an introduction for you all.
All right,
Connie.
Right. Connie has one. I will be right up there. Connie, I have one more here.
Hi, Anna. The idea of abundance is in the air right now around politics. And so I'm just wondering, we did Millennium Park, we did the Riverwalk. Do you have any kind of dream projects, or do you think Chicago can even do a big project coming
up? Yes, I think we can do big projects. We lead on big projects. The problem is we've got to think boldly again and not be so afraid. A friend and I were talking about the scarcity mindset versus abundance, and I understand the federal funding is a real issue, but there is so much wealth in Chicago. There is such a rich civic community that are looking for projects and to roll up their sleeves. And we have a wonderful partner in Springfield. I know they have their own budget challenges, but if we can get together, break out the silos, state, county, and city, map out where the money is going, and come to some agreement on some big projects, I think we can go far. I am borrowing idea. I sat with some business leaders, restaurant owners, and they said, okay, Magnificent Mile. What if we did what Mexico City did? What if we made it pedestrian, art walk, plaza, where it's a place that more people from the suburbs want to get in? Because their issue is, how can we get these families from the suburbs to come one more time into the city? So what would that take to talk to CDOT, our Department of Transportation, our Park District, and others, to say, what does it look to reimagine the Magnificent Mile? And I said, let's do it. Let's go for these things. So I think that's what I meant when I'm speaking, that there's a lot of folks that have great ideas. We need to raise those, and the City Club is one way to do it. So thank you, Dan and Jackie. They have really elevated this club and being a place where ideas can emerge. And people like myself, I watch these. I come, I read, and then think about how can we reach out and make that a reality.
Let's keep that up. Thank you. I'm going to hand it over to Connie Lindsay.
Thank you, Clerk Valencia. Two quick questions. What is your one wish for the city of Chicago? You laid out your thoughts about that. And the other is, what gives you hope for all of the things that we're experiencing now?
So there's a lot of dreams. I want city council to not be 5 hours, every meeting. That would be, I think Alderwoman Stephanie Coleman would talk about that. We got too many resolutions. I think what I would hope is that we get to a place where we're not talking past each other. We're not trying to vie to get our name on the paper all the time. We're just doing the work. And that the people who I know in this room that are doing the work, we find each other. And we don't care about our titles or our ego or who gets credit, or who's standing with that shovel. And we get to work. And my pastors are here today. And, you know, they are, I want to say hello. You know, they're doers too, and investing, not just, and I know a lot of faith leaders are doing this, they're thinking outside their four walls. And they're doing what they can with what they have. And so we all have to think, okay, where can we focus our time on something that's going to move the needle? Things feel out of control, but there are things we can focus on that keep us moving. I'm doing stuff maybe on housing in a few months with the Maya Poar. I'm doing stuff on women and girls. I'm focusing on doing a little because that action will get you out of that funk that the world isn't in. Because it's not. And we can control that. What gives me hope is our next generation of leaders. These young people are amazing. They are smart. They challenge you. They have boundaries about self-care. I mean, they are really showing the way, because that is something I've had to learn. Like, you know, Americans, we live to work and we forget to live and enjoy our lives. And it's okay to disassociate and check out a little bit. We all need that. Get off social media and enjoy our time together. And then we give ourselves a pep talk and we get back into the fight. That's what we got to do. Thank you so much, City Club. Wait, one more?
Sorry, because we do have the Vice Mayor has a question for you.
Vice Mayor has a question.
We have a couple more minutes. We'll
hand
it to him.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Very proud of you, and appreciate everything you've been able to do since you've been elected. You know, as we look at the political arena right now, everyone's looking to do something else. So there's potentially a lot of opportunities out there. Are you limited to just clerk and or mayor?
I am not limited. So Alderman Burnett, I want to, and Vice Mayor, has been really part of our family. I've in the 27th Ward, go to the organization meetings. He puts my name on everything. I go. He's fabulous. And him and Secretary White have really helped mentor me, giving guidance. He is a man of faith, which I love, his heart. I don't think a lot of people know he ministers at the jail, the Cook County Jail. He's ministered there for decades. So he has a serving heart. I'm open to wherever God thinks I can serve and make an impact larger. Because again, you know, I turned 40 in January. I said, 40 is freedom. I'm going to speak my mind. I'm going to do these things. But I really want to live in the everyday, and what can I do to help someone else every single day, like Secretary White says. And so wherever that leads me, wherever my family wants to go, that's where we're going. So thank you again. Now that's it. Thank you so much, City Club.
I had a feeling someone was going to ask that question, because if they didn't, there were three pre-submitted that were along the same lines. So thank you for ending with that, and thank you, Vice Mayor, for being the one to ask it. I often put nuances to it, but sometimes it's just, what are you going to run for next? Sometimes it matters. It's a favorite here at City Club. It's great to have you here. It's great to have you back. We look forward to having you back again.
Not 5 years, though.
Oh, yeah. We're going to move that along a lot quicker. And so much of what you said was what we believe in, right, with civic community coming together and all of you in this room. It's very meaningful to all of us. So I sincerely say thank you to you for coming and bringing all these amazing people, and welcome you all back. We have really a great spring lineup coming together. Attorney General Kwame Raoul is April 1st on next week. Tom Skilling and Don Wubbles are going to talk about climate resilience and sustainability on April 2nd. That's going to be incredible. And then strategies to alleviate poverty in Cook County and beyond on April 9th with Tony Preckwinkle and a few others. The imperative of investing in black men and fathers in Chicago with the Field Foundation on April 22nd. CPS new arts education plan with special guest CEO Pedro Martinez, who's been a little busy, on May 7th. And we're just getting started, folks.
Yeah.
So thanks for helping to kick off this next round, and we'll see you all soon. Have a great Chicago week.